Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 8, the story of Pingala. Text number 9. Stokam stokam grased grasam.
Stokam stokam grased grasam.
Jeho vartita yavata.
Jeho vartita yavata.
Vihanahim san artisted. Vittim madukarim munahi. Stokam stokam grased grasam.
Stokam stokam grased grasam.
Deho vartita yavata. Grihanahim san atishted. Vittim madhukarim munihi. Stokam stokam. Always a little bit. Graset. One should eat. Grasam. Food. Deha. The material body. Vartita. That it may live. Yavata. With that much. Grihan. The householders. Ahimsan, not harassing. Atishtet, one should practice. Vrittim, the occupation. Madhukarim, of the honeybee. Munihi, a saintly person. A saintly person should accept only enough food to keep his body and soul together. He should go from door to door accepting just a little bit of food from each family. Thus he should practice the occupation of the honeybee. Purport. Sometimes a honeybee is attracted by the extraordinary aroma of a particular lotus flower and lingers there, neglecting his usual activity of flying from flower to flower. Unfortunately, at sunset the lotus flower closes and thus the infatuated honeybee is trapped. Similarly, a sannyasi or brahmachari may discover that excellent foodstuff is available at a particular house, and therefore instead of wandering from place to place, he may become a veritable resident of such a well-fed household. Thus he will become bewildered by the illusion of family life and fall down from the platform of renunciation. Also, if a mendicant takes unfair advantage of the Vedic customs of charity and takes too often from a single family, the resentment he causes will disturb the social order. An ideal sage should, like the honeybee, travel from place to place, but he must be careful not to become a chubby bee by going to many houses and eating sumptuously at each house. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, such a chubby bee will undoubtedly become entangled in the network of Maya. No one should be overly attached to the gratification of his tongue, because this will lead to an overstuffed belly and then uncontrollable lust. In conclusion, one should not endeavour very much for material sense gratification, but should instead endeavour strenuously to spread the glories of the Supreme Lord Krishna. This is the proper use of human energy. Om Agnate Mirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmahe Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapradantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yatkripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gunum Dinatavinam. Madhukari. You know, there are four stages of sannyas. Kutichak, Bahudak, Parirajakacharya, and Paramahamsa. And the Prabhupada describes that Kutichak is one who lives in a kutia, or a little residence, away from his family, but the family members may bring him something to eat, some prasadam, some sustenance. So he's moved from, you know, residing at home and the comforts of home, and isolated himself from the rest of the society and from his family, but he's still allowed to, the children or other family members may bring something to sustain. And Prabhupada mentions how in that environment then they will perform their bhajan and study the shastra and build up their philosophical understanding of of things. Then in a more advanced or a more renounced stage, then it's described that rather than depending on the family members, then there'll be more of a renounced mood. And Bahudak is this Madhukari stage, which means that the aspiring yogi or transcendentalist, the sannyasi, will go from house to house and just take something from a number of people. Bahu means many, right? And this is the same as a Madhukari, which is like the Madhukari means like the bee. So it means going from taking a little bit from each place, just like a bee flies to each flower and just takes a little bit of pollen from each one. That's the idea. Just takes a little bit. And so that's what's being described here. Stokam stokam grased grasam deha varteta yavata. So basically, deha varteta yavata means what's required just to live. The sannyasi or the brahmachari, as mentioned here, should just take what is sufficient to survive. And so this Madhukari or Bahudak. And then really what that does is reinforces or it helps to develop the conviction within the mind of the renunciate that ultimately he is dependent upon not his family for survival or for others for his survival, but ultimately he's dependent upon the arrangement of the super soul, the arrangement of Krishna to protect and to sustain his livelihood. And then when one becomes more advanced, then one becomes a Parivrajakacharya, which means somebody who just travels everywhere and completely depends on the Lord for everything. The Bahudak still stays in one place. He still has his kutir, if you like. He still has his place of residence, but he's taking a little bit from everybody. But the Parivrajakacharya has no place of residence and just travels around. There's a very simple understanding of these. And Paramahamsa is one who's completely on the transcendental platform. So the warning here in the purport is that one shouldn't become enamored by, in doing this, in performing these duties or these activities, one shouldn't become enamored or dependent on one person or one location for one's sustenance. And then as a result become again entangled in the material conception by becoming overly dependent on others or on another, and certainly, you know, for eating. You know, there's a very nice example of this principle in Raghunath Das's pastimes, the pastimes of Raghunath Das Goswami, who Raghunath Das was in his childhood very fortunate because he got the association of Haridas Thakur and Advaita Acharya, I believe, but certainly Haridas Thakur, because Haridas Thakur was a friend of Balaramacharya, and Balaramacharya was the pujari for the Majumdars, Govardhan and Hiranyagarbha. And one of them, Hiranyagarbha, I think, was the father of Raghunath Das. His father and his uncle, Raghunath Das's father and uncle, were very wealthy by the standards of the day. He was the son of a very wealthy family. And he was very attracted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, and he wanted to join Mahaprabhu. And there's a sequence of events where he would try to leave home and then the family would bring him back. And it was a cause of great concern and distress for his father and for his uncle, because they wanted him to run the family business, if you like, and he was good at it. Yet he was attracted to being a devotee. Basically, he wanted to run away from home and join the Hare Krishna movement. That was his program. And you can trace this back to his early association with these very elevated devotees like Haridas Thakur and Advaita Acharya. May not have had the association, but he certainly would have known of Advaita Acharya, because Advaita Acharya was a very close friend of Haridas Thakur. So he helped Lord Nityananda and his associates celebrate the Panihati Chiradoi. Was it not Panihati? It's Chiradoi. Panihati, is that the name of the place? Yeah, that's the name of the place. Chiradoi Festival, where Raghunath met Lord Nityananda and his associates, and he provided for the chira and the doi, for the rice and the yogurt for the festival that they celebrated at Panihati. And it was there that he was asking Lord Nityananda, when will I get the mercy? When will I get the mercy of Sri Chaitanya? And Lord Nityananda pacified him and said, in due course of time, Lord Chaitanya will make the arrangement for you. And his father was eventually realized that he wasn't going to be able to keep his son at home, and he mentioned that the things that would ordinarily entangle and entrap anybody else, he had learning, he had wealth, he had a very attractive wife, and yet still he was completely detached from these things. I think Was it Lord Nityananda or Lord Chaitanya who told him to just behave normally? Just behave internally. They encouraged him. Internally, you can develop this mood of detachment, but externally, you have to behave like an ordinary person. Instead of wanting to run away from home all the time, because then everybody's keeping an eye on him to make sure that he doesn't abscond. So eventually an opportunity came. The pujari didn't turn up to do Mangal Aarti. this problem is not new. It's not a new problem. It's an old problem. The pujari slept in. So they sent Raghunath Das to go and get the pujari, but Raghunath Das decided now's the chance. So he left to join Lord Chaitanya in Puri. The family eventually found out that he had gone to Jagannath Puri. He had been placed under the care of Swarup Damodar by Mahaprabhu. And he was living a very simple life, worshipping the Govardhan Shila that Lord Chaitanya had given him, the Gunjamala and the Govardhan Shila, and was performing his bhajan under the auspices of Swarup Damodar, who was his shiksha guru, if you like. And the family found out that he was staying in Puri. So then his father sent servants and money and made sure that Raghunath Das was well looked after. So then what Raghunath Das did was he used that money then to feed all of the Vaishnavas. But then after some time, the feeding of the devotees stopped. And Lord Chaitanya asked Swarup Damodar, what's happened? What's happened? And he said, Raghunath has decided that taking money from his family and taking all of his sumptuous food and so forth is not appropriate for a renunciate. So he's now, and I can't remember exactly what he, there's a sequence of events, but there may be some interim stage that I've forgotten, but certainly there was a point where Swarup Damodar said he's now begging at the Singhadwara gate at the Jagannath temple. So he was just taking, he was receiving, and it's mentioned here, one shouldn't live luxuriously or opulently at the expense of others. So Raghunath Das, he was getting money and servants sent by his father. He accepted it initially, and he used it then to serve the rest of the devotees, but then he decided, this is actually not appropriate. Better that I just go and live simply begging from, just taking something from. Now, actually, I think there was a stage. He would then, after that stage, he would go to the place where I think they were serving meals for the sadhus, something like that. Then he decided he shouldn't do that. So he would just stand at the Singhadwara gate and take alms from whoever was coming. But even then he decided, this is not good because, I'm just on the mental, I get on the mental platform, I think, this person will give me something, or he gave me something yesterday, maybe I can get something from him. And so he decided even that was inappropriate, because he was, becoming dependent upon others and attached to who might give him something, and who wouldn't. So then eventually, and each time Lord Chaitanya would hear about what Raghunath was doing, he would inquire from Swarup Damodar, What's he doing now? And each time Raghunath Das took on this more and more austere platform, then Lord Chaitanya would be pleased. So eventually he found out that he wasn't begging at the Singhadwara gate anymore. So he asked him, what's he doing now? And he said, he's taking the rubbish that's thrown out after the prasadam has been taken. He's going through the rubbish and he's getting out the grains of rice that are left over. Then he's cleaning out the rotten portions and just keeping the bits, the good bits. And Lord Chaitanya said, this is very, very good. So he wasn't depending upon anybody. He was just taking the rubbish, going through the rubbish basically. Sort of a bit like going through the dump master and getting the rice out of the dump master. Which I don't recommend anybody do. Raghunath Das is a very special example of renunciation. But he sort of, you know, he epitomizes this just depending on Krishna and living very, very simply and not being attached to any one or another set of persons to maintain them. And so Lord Chaitanya went to visit Raghunath Das while he was taking prasadam one day. And he said to him, what are you doing? And Raghunath Das was embarrassed that he was taking prasadam in that way. And Lord Chaitanya said, you're having a feast. And you haven't invited me. What is this nectar that you've got here that you're just keeping for yourself? So he's teasing him. In one sense, you know, Raghunath Das has been very austere and Lord Chaitanya is teasing him by saying, you know, you've got a wonderful feast here and you're keeping it from me. Right? Raghunath Das was just embarrassed because he didn't want to give Lord Chaitanya the, you know, really what was the rotten leftovers. But Lord Chaitanya turned it into a joke and said, you must have a feast. That's why you're keeping it from me. So he took a piece and ate it. And he was in ecstasy. So Raghunath Das is a good example of this principle. In fact, he's the epitome of this principle of, you know, not being dependent upon others. Which is a real, you know, it's the mood of a sannyasi. A sannyasi is not meant to be, he's meant to be dependent upon others. That's why we have this kutichak, bahudak, parivrajik acharya, paramahamsa development, so that one realizes and acts on the platform that I'm actually being supported and I'm dependent upon Krishna and Krishna is maintaining me. Otherwise, as mentioned here, just like the bee, if the bee gets caught in relishing the nectar of one lotus flower and becomes caught up in that, doesn't notice the passing of time, the sun sets and then the lotus flower closes up and kills him. So becoming too attached or too dependent upon the material facilities provided by others is a danger for the transcendentalist because it can then lead to activity that is detrimental for devotional service. Atyahara prayasas cha prajopo niyamagraha. Jana sangha chalolyam cha sadbhaktim vinashati. This is described by Rupa Goswami. So overeating or over collecting can be detrimental for the devotee. Over endeavor, prayasas, prajalpa, You know, getting, if one becomes too dependent upon materialistic people and associates too closely with them, then one, there's the danger of being, by that association, you know, accepting and cultivating the same kind of consciousness as a materialistic person. Or just, you know, plain eating too much. And then becoming dependent on another for their material facility, and in that complacency or in that laziness, then falling into material consciousness. So the brahmacharis and the sannyasis are recommended to live fairly simply. Not to speak of also the householders are actually also recommended to live. A transcendentalist is recommended to live here. Deho vartita yavata. Take as much as is needed to keep the body alive and satisfied, happy, within reason, and then use the majority of one's time for maintaining one's Krishna consciousness or developing one's Krishna consciousness, not becoming dependent upon others. Because when you become dependent upon others, then they may withdraw the facility. Then you're in trouble. So the whole idea of bahudak or madhukari is take a little bit from each one and then you'll be supported. Now, how do we apply that? Because, you know, we're in a slightly different situation. I guess in one sense, we do have a somewhat of a madhukari situation, because we have many, many, many supporters. It's not like there's one person that we're totally dependent upon. And a temple shouldn't be like that, where, you know, one person gives all the money and then everybody's dependent upon that one person. Right? So then they start calling the shots. Do this, do that. Then you become... See, that's what happens. If you're dependent on somebody to feed you, then you become a servant of that person if you're not careful. Or you become obliged to that person. Whereas we shouldn't be obliged to anybody other than Krishna. And when a devotee is fully dependent upon Krishna, then they can go to the house of the householders and preach to them. Otherwise, you know, if you're preaching to the householders and they don't like what they're saying, they say, look, go away, we won't feed you anymore. Don't give us this bad news. If you want something to eat, speak nicely. So there's compromise. There can be a compromise. But a devotee shouldn't be in a situation where they can be compromised, ideally. So they can live independent. So, yes, it mentions here, one shouldn't become a chubby bee. Right? Although, a little hard. Living in a temple, especially so much maha prasadam. You know, there's so much nice prasadam to eat. And the devotees complain sometimes, oh, there's just too much prasadam. Too many milk sweets. Of course, they don't have to eat the milk sweets. We have a different kind of a problem. Not that we can't get enough to eat, usually. Yep. No one should be overly attached to the gratification of his tongue, because this will lead to an overstuffed belly, right? And then uncontrollable lust. So, we're dependent on one person, that's Krishna, and Krishna provides us with plenty of prasadam, but even then we should still be restrained. It's okay to be dependent upon Krishna. And in fact, Krishna provides us with prasadam in order to really purify us. That's the benefit of prasadam. So whilst we encourage people to live simply, at the same time we shouldn't do this artificially. So, you know, Prabhupada understood this principle, that prasadam is actually for the purification of the senses, and he would encourage the devotees to eat sumptuously, especially if one has to do service. We're preachers, Goshti Anandi, not Bhajananandi. For the Bhajananandi, living simply and not eating too much and, you know, living a very austere life is appropriate. But sometimes for the Goshti Anandi who has to preach, engage in strenuous activity, out on book distribution, working at Crossways, one actually has to be well fed, right? One has to be sensually and mentally and physically strong to preach. And so, you know, just eating very little may not be a very good idea. And especially, you know, sometimes we see the devotees, they eat less and less and less. You know, in order to sort of imitate somebody like Raghunath does. But then, you know, eventually they snap. And then... So therefore, regulation is recommended, you know. It's this has to be done sensibly and intelligently. And, you know, it'll be different at different stages of one's life. One will require more or less. When you're a teenager or in your 20s, then generally you'll eat more because you're more active, digestion, everything's more, senses are more, powerful. So they need engagement. As you get older, then naturally you'll just eat less. But for a young person to try to eat less without a deep absorption and, you know, attachment for Krishna and complete absorption in Krishna consciousness, then what happens? We see the Mangalarti sweets and then we eat half a dozen of them all in one go. Huh? You're agreeing. Yeah. So the amount of food that one eats, it depends. It differs from person to person. And simply imitating somebody like Raghunath Das is not going to make you advanced. It doesn't make it for an advanced devotee. It makes for a bhoga tyag, right? Enjoyment, sense gratification, then renunciation. Oh, I'm going to give it all up. But then... So does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Prabhupada didn't compromise, no. He also liked prasadam. Yeah. Regulated. You know, when the devotees would put Prabhupada on a healthy diet, then he would reject it. He'd say, "What is this starvation diet?" So he liked, you know, he took prasadam. Relished prasadam. The appropriate amount for, you know, an older gentleman, but still he liked to relish prasadam. So it's not wrong or bad to. That's proper. That should be our standard. we should only eat prasadam. So when it comes to prasadam, no compromise. Anything else? Bhajanai. Chips? Chips and crackers? What do I say about that? There's different types of prasadam. And, you know, there's Sankirtan, Party Prasadam, there's Maha Prasadam. There's prasadam that you might have if you're travelling. So you have to, you know, you have to be practical sometimes. But ideally we should try to eat, we should try to honour the Maha Prasadam as much as possible. My personal standard is not to eat grains that are cooked by... That's Lord Chaitanya's instruction in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya says we shouldn't eat grains cooked by non-devotees. So, you know, wheat bix and cornflakes and rice bubbles and crackers, bread bought outside. I wouldn't take it. Chips, maybe if I'm on a long haul flight somewhere and I'm dying of starvation, chips are okay. Just. But my personal standard is no grains cooked by non-devotees. But otherwise, you know, if I'm feeling hungry, I don't hop down to the 7-Eleven and buy a packet of chips. There's not usually not that long to wait till you can get something decent to eat. And you know, you can get dried fruit. There's things that you can get if you... If you're travelling, then there are things you can buy that are, you know, you can offer. Well, it's mentioned that the consciousness of the cook goes into the items that have been prepared, and so that will affect the person who eats them, and I assume that that's pertinent or, you know, relevant to the consumption of grains, and it may not be as much of an issue for other items. Yeah, possibly. Don't know. I'm assuming.
Becoming attached to Krishna might not be an easy condition. Who else can become attached to?
Well, Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar of Devotion that it's Krishna and his associates, Krishna and his pastimes, Krishna and his dham, Krishna and his devotees, Krishna's prasadam, so many things we can become attached to. The philosophy. I know when I first came to the temple, I was attracted to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. I like the Chan Hare Krishna, but I think, you know, the thing that really convinced me was the halva. So many things we can become attached to. So long as it's connected to Krishna, then we should become attached to it. Okay? Somebody, or Brajan?
I just heard a couple of friends say some difference between the foot and the doggy.
There's what?
Difference between the foot and the doggy, like, so that it's like a hierarchy. Your grandson is up there and the hierarchy is so that it's more cordial to take time on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I have to do some research to find out why grains are. Why not grains and other things are okay. So because normally, you know, you'll purchase things in a raw state. And, but then, you know, it's a tradition in India, especially to buy sweets, right? It's not considered wrong to go and buy sweets from the Mishti Wala, and then you can offer them to the deities, right? They do that sometimes. Not the best, but it's whereas for grains, you probably wouldn't do that. You'd prepare them yourself and offer them. So, my assumption is, from what I've read, that you know the grains absorb the consciousness more readily than other items, and so therefore that's why they're avoided, lest one's mind become wicked. All right. Let's finish here. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.